ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 4, Text Number 1. Was the chapter summary already read? No, it hasn't been read yet either. No. Was not. Huh? You should read the summary first of the chapter. The son of Maharaj Nabi begot 100 sons, and during the reign of those sons the world was very happy in all respects. When Rishabhdev appeared as the son of Maharaj Nabi, he was appreciated by the people as the most exalted and beautiful personality of that age. His poise, influence, strength, enthusiasm, bodily luster, and other transcendental qualities were beyond compare. The word Rishabha refers to the best or the supreme. Due to the super excellent attributes of the son of Maharaj Nabi, the king named his son Rishabha, or the best. His influence was incomparable. Although there was a scarcity of rain, Rishabhdev did not care for Indra, the king of heaven, who was in charge of supplying rain. Through his own potency, Rishabhdev sumptuously covered Ajanabha with ample rain. Upon receiving Rishabhdev, who is the supreme personality of Godhead, as his son, King Nabi began to raise him very carefully. After that, he entrusted the ruling power to him, and retiring from family life, lived at Badarik Ashram, completely engaged in the worship of Vasudev, the Supreme Lord. To follow social customs, Lord Rishabhdev, for a while, became a student in the Gurukula, and after returning, he followed the orders of his guru and accepted a wife named Jayanti, who had been given to him by the king of heaven, Indra. He begot 100 sons in the womb of Jayanti. Of these 100 sons, the eldest was known as Bharat. Since the reign of Maharaj Bharat, this planet has been called Bharatvarsha. Rishabhdev's other sons were headed by Kushavarta, Ilavarta, Brahmavarta, Malaya, Ketu, Bhadrasena, Indraspik, Vidarbha, and Kikata. There were also other sons named Kavi, Havi, Antariksha, Prabuddha, Palayana, Avyahotra, Jumila, Jamasa, and Karabhajana. Instead of ruling the kingdom, these 9 became mendicant preachers of Krishna consciousness, following the religious precepts of the Bhagavatam. Their characteristics and activities are described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam during the talks between Vasudeva and Narada at Kurukshetra. To teach the general populace, King Rishabhdev performed many sacrifices and taught his sons how to rule the citizens. Text 1. Also in prose, so we'll simply do the word-for-word translation. Shri Shuka Uvacha, Shri Shukadev Goswami said. Translation. Shri Shukadev Goswami said, as soon as the Lord was born as the son of Maharaj Nabi, he manifested symptoms of the Supreme Lord, such as marks on the bottoms of his feet, the flag, thunderbolt, etc. This son was equal to everyone and very peaceful. He could control his senses and his mind, and possessing all opulence, he did not hanker for material enjoyment. Endowed with all these attributes, the son of Maharaj Nabi became more powerful day after day. And due to this, the citizens, learned Brahmins, demigods, and ministers wanted Rishabhdev to be appointed ruler of the earth. Purport. In these days of cheap incarnations, it is very interesting to note the bodily symptoms found in an incarnation. From the very beginning of his birth, it was observed that Rishabhdev's feet were marked with the transcendental signs, a flag, thunderbolt, lotus flower, etc. In addition to this, as the Lord began to grow, he became very prominent. He was equal to everyone. He did not favor one person and neglect another. An incarnation of God must have the six opulences: wealth, strength, knowledge, beauty, fame, and renunciation. It is said that although Rishabhdev was endowed with all opulences, he was not at all attached to material enjoyment. He was self-controlled and therefore liked by everyone. Due to his super excellent qualities, everyone wanted him to rule the earth. An incarnation of God has to be accepted by experienced people and by the symptoms described in the Shastras. An incarnation is not accepted simply by the adulation of foolish people. So here, this chapter begins with the appearance of Lord Rishabhdev, as described in the previous chapter. The Lord appeared before the sacrifice of Maharaj Nabi and agreed to appear as the son of Nabi and Meru Devi in his original spiritual form, which is above the modes of material nature. Here it is described that when the Lord took his birth, he manifested all these symptoms as being an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. Elsewhere, I'll read one verse from the next chapter where the Lord describes his transcendental body. He says that my transcendental body, Satchidananda Vigraha, looks exactly like a human form, but it is not a material body. It is inconceivable. I am not forced by nature to accept a particular type of body. I take on a body by my own sweet will. My heart is also spiritual, and I always think of the welfare of my devotees. Therefore, within my heart can be found the process of devotional service, which is meant for the devotees. Far from my heart have I abandoned irreligion and non-devotional activities. They do not appeal to me. Due to all these transcendental qualities, people generally pray to me as Rishabhdev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all living entities. In this verse also, the Lord is giving the characteristics of his particular characteristics as he appeared in this particular incarnation of the Lord. Therefore, as Srila Prabhupada explains, when the Lord appears, he appears in various different manifestations and incarnations. But one should be very, very careful to not accept a false incarnation of the Lord. All the symptoms should be manifest. The proper symptoms should be there, and also it should be understood that the Lord's appearance should be given within the scripture. Prabhupada would oftentimes, he would speak openly about this point, obviously because many times many cheap incarnations would appear, and simply on the basis of a good advertising agent and the a few sponsors, they could actually become recognized in due course of time as the Supreme Lord, because maybe they have some mystic powers or mystic of yogic abilities. I remember one time, I always think of this example, because I was walking into a very popular New Age store in Boston. And I saw on the wall there was a big poster of a New Age incarnation. His name was Da Fijan, yeah, or Baba Fijan. I think it was first Baba Fijan, then later became Da Fijan. He had established an institute called the Laughing Man's Institute, which was basically a means of becoming detached from the world through some kind of method of just laughing or whatever it was. But what was most what was most profound is a great big poster. And this is in a very prestigious area of Boston. Many people go to this store. On the bottom, it had an endorsement from Alan Watts. Alan Watts was, of course, I remember him back from the 60s, 70s. He was very well known as a Buddhist, a Zen Buddhist. He wrote many books on Buddhism. And he gave an endorsement under Baba Fijan. By his endorsement in big, big letters under the bottom, it says, "I think we have an avatar here." Alan Watts. So, of course, he starts it off with, "I think." He's very popular. He's written a lot of books. And somehow, he must have gotten a good amount of money for that quote. But this is one type of an example. I remember also when I was the president of the Boston Temple, I used to receive all the mail made endorsed to the president of the temple. I think it was maybe also late 70s, 1979, 1980. There was an incarnation of the Supreme Lord in America that I wasn't aware of, but I received a notice in the mail. It was a little brochure which was telling, it was written by a follower of the Kalki Avatar. You've seen this, Maharaj? It was very... Huh? You read the whole book? You saw it in my room, it's still there, huh? I didn't know where it was. I thought it was gone, but it's still in my bookshelf. Maybe it's more fresh in your memory, because I only, of course, I saw it back in 1979. It's been sitting there for 26 years. So I can't remember all the details were there. But it was written by a follower who, I think he declared that his realization that this personality was Kalki was because while he was sitting and giving a lecture, and he was sitting in the back and nobody else saw, but he saw flames coming from his mouth, right? Is that what it was? That was part of his testimony. Flames were coming from his mouth. And somehow that evidence, although unseen by anyone else, was taken as a very substantial evidence that this was Kalki Avatar. And many pictures, I think, were taken of him with his wife and his kids and friends. You know, he was standing there with his... And he was traveling around the world. And I don't know, I don't think he was that popular, to be honest with you. But because he had a good brochure and had somebody who knew a little bit about layout, he was being introduced to people throughout the world as an incarnation. This is just... We can go through so many. Prabhupada, of course, had to speak out openly in so many ways because of, I remember even during the 60s and 70s, it was not uncommon for an incarnation of the Lord to all of a sudden appear on Western soil. And gather a few followers, and of course, because the West had opulence, had money, they could certainly promote an incarnation of God without too much difficulty through the various means of propaganda which were available at the time. And Prabhupada was obviously very much concerned that people would not be cheated to accept simply some person who himself declares, or as Prabhupada explains in the purport, he says that such avatars, they have to be recognized or accepted by experienced people. not fools. Somebody who's experienced and somebody who's capable of recognizing the characteristics of somebody who is the Supreme Lord or empowered by the Supreme Lord. The Lord appears in different forms. I think it's described that there are three primary the forms of the Lord. There's the Svayam Rupa, the Tarikatma Rupa, and then there's, of course, the Avesha Rupa. The Svayam Rupa, of course, is when the Lord appears in his original form. Svayam Bhagavan. Of course, we understand with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears as Svayam Bhagavan. He appears once in every millennium, as he explains in Bhagavad Gita, Ajopi Sanavi Atma Bhutanam Ishwaropi Sam. Although I'm unborn, my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all sentient beings, still I appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So, Krishna's bhati is, of course, transcendental beyond the influence of the three modes of material nature. And Krishna displays his Svayam Rupa form, Svayam Bhagavan, once in every day of Lord Brahma. The Lord appears in this original transcendental form as Svayam Bhagavan. And as he explains, and as also explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this original form of the Lord, Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam Indrari Vyakulam Lokam Vridayanti Yuge Yuge. That all of these incarnations of the Lord, the various incarnations of the Lord, are either plenary portions or portions of plenary portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're either Angsa or Kala. Angsa means expansion of the Lord, and Kala, they're further expansions of expansions. So, Ete Changsa Kala Pungsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. All of them appear, these are plenary portions or portions of plenary portions of the Lord. All of them appear whenever there is disturbances created by the atheist, the Lord appears in order to protect the theists and protect the devotees of the Lord. Therefore, right in the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, evidence is given of the different incarnations who appear. As we said first, there is the Svayam Rupa, the Lord appears in his original form. And then, of course, there's the Tarikatma Rupa, which is the expansions of the Lord. Some of the expansions which are eternally manifest, situated within the spiritual world, then as well, some of them appear or avatar, some of them descend into this world in order to fulfill a particular purpose. And then there is the Avesha Rupa. The Avesha Rupa, of course, is the empowered incarnations of the Supreme Lord, such as Saktyavesha. There is the Saktyavesha avatars. There's the Bhagavadavesha avatars. I think there's three types. One is what Bhagavadavesha, Saktyavesha, and then Vibhutis. Bhagavadavesha is the Supreme Lord appears. And then the Saktyavesha is the empowered incarnations, which can be the different jivas who are empowered with certain potencies of the Supreme Lord to fulfill a particular purpose. And then there are the vibhutis, which also come under the category of avesha. The vibhutis are the different opulences of the Supreme Lord, and which Krishna describes in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, of how he appears in this world, manifest in the different opulences of this world. They are also described as avesha. So then there are the directly empowered incarnations and the indirectly empowered incarnations of the Lord. So, Rishabhdev, he is Avesh. He is, I believe he's Bhagavad Avesh. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not Saktyavesh. He's not the Jiva who is empowered, but he's actually the Supreme Lord himself who appears and to fulfill a particular purpose in this world. I think also explained later. The Lord actually describes himself, one of the purposes for which he appeared is Rishabhdev. He says, Lord Rishabhdev was the head of all kings and emperors within this universe, but assuming the dress and language of an avaduta, he acted as if dull and materially bound. Consequently, no one could observe his divine opulence. He adopted this behavior just to teach yogis how to give up the body. Nonetheless, he maintained his original position as a plenary expansion of Lord Vasudev, Krishna. Remaining always in that state, he gave up his pastimes as Lord Rishabhdev within the material world. If following in the footsteps of Lord Rishabhdev, one can give up his subtle body, there's no chance that one will accept the material body again. So it's described that one of the purposes for which he descended was to teach how to give up the body. He practiced Jada Yoga, which was a form of yoga which he became completely detached from the body in all respects. In fact, he was so detached from the body, as we'll read in the descriptions of the Bhagavatam, he appeared to walk this earth as a deaf, dumb, as a person who was completely an avaduta, completely had nothing to do, no connection whatsoever with the material world. Everything he did was completely contrary to the norms of society. And sometimes people would see him and they would ridicule him. Young children, they would spit on him, and they did not recognize. They could not recognize that he was the Supreme Lord. And he came to fulfill this particular purpose. Of course, in order to recognize, one has to have the qualification to see. Just as Prabhupada said, in order to recognize an incarnation of the Lord, it has to be recognized by those who are experienced, one who has the qualification to see the Supreme Lord, to see the qualities, to see the characteristics which are manifest in that personality, in his appearance. Therefore, simply self-proclamation or simply statements by persons who have no qualification to recognize should not be accepted as the criteria for an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, as we have already given evidence. One actually has to be qualified. Just as Arjuna, when Arjuna said to Krishna that, "Oh, you are Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord. Not only am I saying this, but Asita, Devala, Vyas, they've also ascertained. These are not ordinary persons which have given their authentication about Krishna's divinity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They've already established themselves as self-realized souls and become recognized themselves as persons who are capable of giving substantial evidence of the divinity of the Supreme Lord. So Arjuna says, "Now I've realized who you are, but I'm not just saying it on my own authority, but I'm also repeating the statements of others who have recognized you. Asita, Devala, Vyas, they've also said this of you. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I accept you as the Supreme Lord." So, these evidences are given in the Shastra. And here it is also described in this verse some of the prominent features of the Lord. Even when the Lord first appeared, he had the marks on his lotus feet. He was also, as he described, as he began to grow, he became very prominent. But one of the prominent characteristics of the Supreme Lord is that he was equal to everyone. He did not favor one person and neglect another person. Krishna, of course, says that of himself in the Bhagavad Gita, "Samaham sambhavuteshu name dveshosti na priha." He says, "I am not envious of anyone, I am equal to all. Whoever renders a little service to me as a friend is in me, and I am a friend to them." The Lord, he is equal to every living being. He's not like sometimes we see that in the material world, we see that there's different candidates or political candidates who are trying to come to power. In order to appeal to the masses, they try to present themselves as being servants of different members of society, trying to get the majority in order to induce them to vote for them, to establish their position as leader amongst the world by popular votes. They think that, "Oh yes, I'll be equal to you, I'll be equal to you, I'll serve these classes, I'll serve everyone." They try to present themselves that they'll be servants, public servants to so many classes of people. But in this way, we understand that such persons may present themselves in this way, but who can be equal to everyone? Nobody. Therefore, different when there's political leaders trying to come to office. Usually one will try to reach to a certain majority and another one will try to find another, like in America just recently in the election. You know, one candidate was trying to reach out to a certain class of majority of people. But such persons, although they try to present themselves as equal to everyone, that they're always, it is us and them, friends and enemies. Who could be equal to everyone? Only the Supreme Lord can be equal to everyone, because the Supreme Lord is not dependent upon anyone for votes. He's not dependent upon anybody to establish his position. He already has it. He has it eternally. And he doesn't need somebody to substantiate his identity as being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't need somebody to give their support. He's always the Supreme Lord. Always was and always will be. Prabhupada explains that actually that is the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entity. That the Supreme Lord is always the Supreme Lord and the living entity is never the Supreme Lord. That is a fundamental difference. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that his position is that he's existed in the past, he's existed in the present, he will continue to exist in the future. All living beings are coming from him, everything is resting upon him. So his position as the Supreme Lord does not have to be established by anybody else. Therefore he can be equal to everyone because he's not dependent upon anyone. And therefore such statements are also given in the scripture, how the Supreme Lord is not dependent upon anybody. Everything rests upon me, he says. What is it? Mahititeshna. Matak paratanam nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya. He says, no truth is superior to me. Everything rests upon me just like pearls are resting upon a thread. Everyone is dependent upon me. Everything is resting upon my energies. Nothing can exist independent from me. So, therefore, the Supreme Lord, his position is that he is not dependent upon anyone else. He is self-sufficient. He is self-satisfied. He is the Supreme Controller. Therefore, his position of always is Bhagavan, which means, as Prabhupada also explains, another characteristic of the Supreme Lord, is that he's one who possesses all opulences in full. Therefore, he manifests the opulences of wealth, strength, knowledge, beauty, fame, and renunciation. All of these opulences were manifested in his character. So, the difference between the Supreme Lord and the living entity is that the Lord can be equal to all living beings. That is the point we were making. Samaham samibhuteshu namne dveshosti na priyaha. Because he is not dependent upon anyone. So this verse, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord describes his equality towards all living beings, this is a very important verse. Just as Lord Rishabhdev is incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and therefore he manifests some of the qualities of the Supreme Lord. One of the qualities which is herein manifest is described as his equality towards everyone. He did not favor one person and neglect another. That is the position of the Supreme Lord is in his equality. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am not envious of anyone, I am equal to anyone. Whoever renders a little service to me as a friend is in me, and I am a friend to them. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the first part of this verse is the Lord and his form as Supersoul. But actually, in the second part of the verse, it appears that the Lord is making some distinction. He says, whoever is a friend to me, I'm a friend to them. So how is it the Lord has friends? Because if somebody has friends, and that means some are not his friends. That in itself, it almost seems like a contradiction. On the first part, he says, I'm equal to everyone, but somebody's my friend. That means that somebody's not his friend. Whoever renders to me service to me, he's my friend. And I'm a friend to him. That sounds also like, in the material world, how somebody, you be my friend, I'll be your friend. You do something for me, I'll do something for you. You vote for me, I promise, if you vote for me, then I'll do this for you. If you're friends to me, I'll be friend to you. So it almost expresses how the Lord is also seems to have a particular quality which is not really equality towards every living being. But actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that this characteristic of the Supreme Lord should not be considered as a fault, but it's an ornament of the Supreme Lord. It is called bhushanam, an ornament of the Supreme Lord, that the Lord is very naturally disposed towards someone who is fully dependent upon Him. He reciprocates. It is natural for the Lord to reciprocate for somebody towards somebody who is fully dependent upon Him. I think the example Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives is just like a desire tree. He says, like a desire tree, a person, if he wants the fruits of a desire tree, he may worship the desire tree. But actually, he's not really interested in the desire tree, he's interested in the fruit. And similarly, the desire tree does not become attached to the person who worships him. Nor does he hate somebody who's not attached to worshiping him. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives this example about the desire tree. He says, but the difference between the desire tree and the Supreme Lord is that the Lord also, He does something which is beyond that. What does the Lord do? The Lord, He naturally behaves towards somebody who has bhakti in a particular way. And that is that He can be a friend to the devotee. He can also become an enemy. He can also be indifferent towards somebody. How does He become a friend or an enemy or indifferent towards somebody if He's equal to everyone? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, whenever bhakti is present, because bhakti is so powerful that it controls the Supreme Lord, whenever bhakti is present, then the Lord's behavior will follow according to bhakti. That is the power of bhakti. Just as Krishna says, the unalloyed devotional service rendered by my devotee brings me under His control. Nisadiyatu mam yogo nasyankya dharma udava. He says, when a devotee worships me with unalloyed devotion, completely dependent upon me, I become controlled by him. Therefore, the example is given that the Lord becomes an enemy of somebody, and just like He told the demigods. He told the demigods when they came to worship, the demigods came to out of fear of Hiranyakashipu. He told the demigods that because Hiranyakashipu is an enemy of Prahlad, I will destroy him. Duryodhana. Duryodhana, he said, because you're envious of the Pandavas, you're my enemy. Anyone who is envious of the Pandavas is as good as being envious of me, and therefore you're my enemy. So how is it the Lord has an enemy? It's because of the enmity was connected to the Pandavas. Therefore, the Lord said, because you're envious of the Pandavas who are completely dependent upon me, who are fully devoted to me, therefore, you're my enemy as well. And then the example is also given about Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa Muni. Maharaj Ambarish, he was also completely dependent upon the Lord, a pure devotee of the Lord. But the Lord became indifferent to Durvasa Muni. When Durvasa Muni approached the Lord for protection, the Lord said, what can I do? Now how is it the Lord can be indifferent? He's supposed to be equal to everyone. Durvasa Muni came to the Lord and said, please, look at me. Certainly, you're the Supreme Lord. How can you be indifferent towards somebody who's suffering? I'm suffering. I'm being chased after by the Sudarshan Chakra. And now I've come to take shelter of you. After going to Lord Brahma, I went to Lord Brahma, then I went to Lord Shiva. They said, I can't do anything. Lord Brahma said, I can't do anything. The Chakra was invoked by the Supreme Lord. He went to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva said, I can't do anything either. And then he went to the Supreme Lord himself, and the Lord said, I can't do anything either. And Durvasa Muni says, what means? What does it mean you can't do anything? How can you be indifferent to me? I'm suffering. So it appears that the Lord was indifferent. He said, that is that verse in the Bhagavatam where he says that I'm not at all independent. I'm completely dependent upon my devotee. I'm not at all independent. Because the devotees have no fruit of desires within their heart. I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotees? Even those who are devotees or servants of my devotees, they're very dear to me. So the Lord says, I'm not independent. You're thinking that I can protect you, but actually I've become controlled by Maharaja Ambarish. And therefore, although you want my protection, I can't protect you. You have to go back to him. Of course, we gave this example once before. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that how it is that the Lord was indifferent towards Durvasa Muni. He gives that Purvapaksha. It was a dialogue in his commentary on these verses of the Bhagavatam. And he says that if Durvasa Muni approached the Lord and said, how is it that you say that you're not independent? You're the Supreme Lord. Certainly you must be independent. And the Lord said, no, it is my svabhava. It is my nature. It is my nature to be dependent upon my devotee. And then Durvasa Muni, if he were to say to the Lord, but look at me, I'm suffering. And certainly if you see somebody suffering, because you're the Supreme Lord, you'll want to mitigate his suffering. Look at me, just try. And then the Lord said, no, I can't understand your suffering. I can't even think about your suffering because I don't have a mind to think about your suffering. And I don't have a heart either. Because I don't even belong to myself. My mind and my heart don't belong to me anymore. They've been taken by somebody else. They've been taken by Durvasa Muni. So how can I think of your suffering if he has my mind and heart? And then he explains how Maharaj Ambarish had his mind and his heart. He said, when my devotee serves me without any desire for anything in return, and serves me out of love, he said, it's very natural. I want to reciprocate with him because he loves me. I want to... Yayatamampapajante. He loves me so much, I want to give something in return. But the difficulty is that my devotee, he never wants anything. Therefore, I say to my devotee, please let me do something for you. And my devotee says, no, Lord, please just let me serve you. And then the Lord asks him again, but let me give you something. But my devotee every time says, no, I don't want anything from you. Just please let me remember you. Please let me serve you. But the Lord wants to reciprocate. It's natural to reciprocate with somebody. Yes, he says, I reciprocate with everyone. But he reciprocates most with those who love him. So what does he give them? What does he give them? And therefore he tells Durvasa Muni, he says, because my devotees take me within their heart and are always worship me within their heart, I'm in their heart. How do I enter within their heart? Because every time I ask my devotee for something, he says, no, I don't want wealth, I don't want power, I don't want position, but I want to give him something, so I have to give him that which is most valuable. Even though he doesn't ask for it, what will I give him which is most valuable to him? I give him my heart. So therefore the devotee has the heart of the Lord. Such is the power of bhakti. And because the devotee has the heart of the Lord, even though Durvasa Muni comes to the Lord and says, please, look at me. The Lord says, no, I have mercy, but it's not here. It's there. You have to go back to Ambarish Maharaj because he has my mercy. It's not you'll be neglected, but you have to go back to him and to get it. Such is the power of bhakti. In this way, the Lord is demonstrating how he's equal to everyone. He appears personally to be indifferent to Durvasa Muni, but he's not indifferent. He's just telling Durvasa Muni, go to my devotee and you'll see. My devotee will always forgive. Because that's the nature of my devotee. My devotee is equal to everyone. In fact, in the Bhagavatam, he explains, he says, by the dust of the lotus feet of my pure devotee, I desire to purify the entire material world which is situated within me. And thus I always follow in the footsteps of my devotees, who are equal to everyone, who are always absorbed in thoughts of me. So, therefore, the Lord says, go back to Maharaj Ambarish. Although the Lord himself was indifferent, although the Lord himself appeared to be Maharaj Ambarish's friend, although the Lord himself appeared to be the enemy of Duryodhana, appeared to be the enemy of Hiranyakashipu. But therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the Lord's behavior is natural because it's connected to bhakti, such as the power of bhakti. So here is explained that one of the characteristics of Maharaj Rishabhdev is that he was equal to everyone. Therefore, being equal to everyone, everyone recognized this as one of his qualities, and he said, he's an ideal person to be leader. We want him to be king. It's not that the king comes forward and says, okay, and puts forward his campaign and says, now vote for me. No. He manifested the qualities already. And those who experienced and those who could understand these qualities manifested in Maharaja Rishabhdev, they could understand he is an ideal person to become the ruler of the world. And that is the point that Srila Prabhupada is making here in this purport. That he was equal to everyone. He did not favor one person and neglect another. And he manifested the six opulences in full. Wealth, strength, knowledge, beauty, fame, renunciation. He was endowed with all opulences. But even though he was endowed with all these opulences, he was not at all attached. That is the position, of course. He's not attached means that he didn't need any of these things. He was fully self-satisfied, just as the Supreme Lord. And just as a devotee of the Lord, who is always dependent upon the Lord, in the same way a devotee of the Lord is fully self-satisfied because the Lord satisfies all of his desires within his heart. Therefore, we can see the great importance, and not only that the king should manifest all these qualities, but the king should be a devotee of the Lord. Because unless the leader of society is a devotee of the Lord, how can he actually think of the welfare of the citizens? Prabhupada makes that point in so many different places. How can actually someone think of the welfare of others if he's still attached and can only think of himself? He can't think of the welfare of others. Therefore, such persons have to be detached. They have to be detached from the material world, and they have to be attached to the service of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, such persons are qualified to become ideal leaders in society. But of course, we understand in the age of Kali Yuga, one of the characteristics or symptoms of Kali Yuga, as the example is given, is that one will mistake the glowworms in the trees to be the real luminaries in the sky. This is an example that is given in the Krishna book. The glowworms are there in the trees, but because the clouds of Kali Yuga are so fully manifest, the people can't see the real luminaries in the sky. And instead, they mistake the glowworms as the luminaries. And what do they look for in leadership? What is that verse? Men who are hot like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. They glorify those persons who have similar mentality. Is that the verse in the Bhagavatam? Prabhupada explains in the purport, he says, people who are hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they glorify them because they think this person's, they're better hogs, dogs, camels, and asses than I am. Therefore, they glorify them. They want these people to be ideal leaders of so-called ideal leaders of society, or what to speak of. They want to recognize such persons who have no qualification whatsoever as an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of God by making such statements as, I think we've got an avatar here. They don't look. They cannot see. They're blind. So those who are blind, they should not offer any assistance to humanity by giving such endorsements. Those who are blind, they do not have the qualification to see, and neither can they help anybody. We understand that the real luminaries are those who actually have spiritual vision. Those who have understood the conclusions of the scriptures. Those who understand some of the qualities and characteristics of the Supreme Lord Himself. And those who actually know how to recognize those qualities, not only in the Supreme Lord, but in the devotees of the Lord. Because it's only by the grace of the devotees of the Lord that one can actually establish the proper standard of living in human society today. And therefore we see certainly the great gift that Srila Prabhupada has given the world, that Srila Prabhupada has given to us, this opportunity to have our eyes opened with proper spiritual vision so that we would not be cheated and fooled and misled by false prophets, by false incarnations of the Supreme Lord, and so that we'll actually be able to recognize what are the characteristics of somebody who actually can help us to approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thereby achieve all full perfection, not only, as Prabhupada said, not only in this life, but in next life. Prabhupada would always make that statement so often, that in this world and the next, this is how one can become happy. How to be happy in this world and in the next world. So Prabhupada is giving us the formula for peace and happiness in this world. And therefore, he is also helping us to root out or to distinguish, properly discriminate between what is actually genuine, what is authentic, what is bona fide, what is a bona fide system of religion, who can be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the bona fide representative of the Supreme Lord, one who also manifests these qualities and presents himself always as a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, one will not be foolishly cheated and accept either an incarnation or a representative of the Lord simply by the adulation of foolish people who have a good advertising agent, good sponsor, and enough knowledge with Photoshop to establish an incarnation. Photoshop or whatever the other programs that there are for publishing good material to advertise somebody as the incarnation of the Supreme Lord or the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All right. Any questions, comments?
Shiva Vyasadeva, Shaktyavesh incarnation of Lord or direct incarnation of part of. I mean, you say you call it Bhagavanavesh, but.
Bhagavadavesh, yeah. Bhagavadavesh. Examples given of Bhagavadavesh, I think, were Rishabhdev, Kapila. But Kapila Dev was also given an example as Bhagavadavesh. Vyasadeva is given as example of Shaktyavesh. Right, Maharaj?
Vyasadeva is a post, so it's usually filled by a living entity. So I guess that would be Shaktivesh.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but it may be possible that the Supreme Lord
could appear.
And then maybe that would be then Bhagavadavesh.
Yeah.
But well, it seems that it's usually Shaktivesh avatar, the living entities invested with
right.
The potency of the Lord to do a particular
right.
Exhibit a particular opulence of the Lord.
Just like the example of Lord Brahma. When there's no Lord Brahma, then the Lord himself appears to fulfill the post. So. Okay, I guess I think we can end here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.